Holly Gordon's the executive director of 10x10. She sets the strategy and leads the day-to-day operations for Educate Girls, Change the World, as a global campaign for girls' education. She's also an executive producer for the film at the center of the 10x10 campaign, Girl Rising. She was selected by Fast Company to be a member of the League of Extraordinary Women in 2013. I love that name. She was number one most dynamic, named by Newsweek and the Daily Beast as one of the 125 women of impact, same year. Forbes magazine named her the 10x10 campaign the number one most dynamic social initiative of 2012. And prior to this, she was the director of content for the Tribeca Film Festival, and she came to Tribeca from ABC, where she worked for ABC News, where she worked for 12 years as a producer and booker for the major news broadcast. She tweets at Holly Gordon. Please help me welcome to the stage Holly Gordon.
How about that? Starting a skydiving school. That is really cool. Talk about sort of living a dream, right? That's fun. Take your passion and dive. So hi guys, I'm really happy to be here. I'm freezing too. I can see you buried beneath your fleece. I'm like, we'll get through this, shiver freeing. I am, as Mary just said, a former journalist, and I'm here today to talk to you about my work producing the film Girl Rising and creating a global campaign for girls' education. How many boys do we have in the room? None. Interesting. One of the first questions you might ask is, why girls' education? Why not boys' education? Does anyone want to answer that for me? Well, there's girls' education here in this country, but what happens to girls in other places? Do you guys know? Why not? Yeah, but why not? Yeah, because they're girls, but why not? Yes? Right? So they're much more often kept home to do work, raise other siblings, do women's work, right? And what do you think needs to change for that to change? Education of whom? And who else? Who else has control over a girl's life? Men, yep. Policy leaders, maybe? The people who make decisions that affect girls' lives? This project started as a research assignment. We're a team of journalists, as I said, and the research assignment was not one based on gender, and that's important for all of you to know. It started as a question. The question we were asked is, what's the best intervention for breaking cycles of poverty? So how do you stop poverty from happening, or how do you lift people from poverty? And so we called experts. We do what journalists do. When you're asked a question you don't know the answer to, you call other people who are much, much smarter than you are, and you ask them the question. And what we found was in every discipline of poverty alleviation, whether it be HIV/AIDS, infant mortality, maternal health, democracy building, peace and security, civil society, all of these kind of development buzzwords, but agricultural production, right? How do you grow more food? The experts could tell us about their discipline and, for example, in agricultural production, irrigation systems, genetically modified foods, you know, fertilizer programs, and then they would always, within the top three interventions, these experts in all these various fields would say, but there's an interesting thing that happens in countries when girls are able to stay in school through adolescence and reach higher levels of learning. What's that interesting thing? The country grows more food because women are the largest number of small farmers in the world are women. You give them better education, they grow more food. Oh, you know what else happens? More children are vaccinated and live past the age of 5. Huh, really? So you educate a girl through adolescence, and then she has children, and they're healthier, and that's easier on the nation, right? Fewer children dying and fewer children needing health care from the state or from the government. That's interesting. Oh, yes, and when more women are in government, corruption declines. And when more women... No way? Amen. And when more and the more women are repressed in a society, guess what's more likely to happen? War. So, as journalists, the definition of a really big story is when you discover something, an intervention, whatever it may be, to be true, that would have an incredibly big impact on many, many people if more people were doing it, right? So you get this idea, like, it would be great if girls were educated because look at all these amazing things happen, and you look around the world and it's not happening. Well, that's a story that needs to be told. We should be doing it. How many of you recycle? Just look around so you can see how many hands are up. If I had asked you that question 5 years ago, maybe two hands would have gone up. An Inconvenient Truth is the landmark film that Al Gore made about climate change that almost everyone in the world saw, or at least felt like everyone in the world saw it. It elevated a conversation that experts knew. Experts knew that something was happening to our climate, and that film made sure that all of us knew. And then it made sure that corporate America and global corporations knew. And it started to make us think about environmentalism, and it started making us think about recycling. And look at what happened in 10 years. A room full of people who wouldn't have had separate bins for their trash, all of you are now recycling. So the reason I tell that story is that at the heart of Girl Rising is a fundamental belief that you can change behavior when you raise awareness, and that film can be a powerful tool for change. So we did this research assignment, and we discovered this incredible truth about girls. Remember, we didn't set out to find a truth about girls. I am a feminist, and I hope all of you are feminists. And I say that a definition of a feminist is if you believe that girls and boys and men and women should be equal, have equal laws, have equal opportunities, be paid equally, accept responsibility for crappy things that happen equally. We can fail equally. We're not superhuman. So if there are more women in the workplace, it doesn't mean that everything's going to be fabulous and we're going to screw up too, but give us a chance to be equal. So that's feminism. But I didn't come to this because I was a feminist. I came to this because I'm a journalist, and this was a really important story. So we decided that we would make a film that would capture this truth, capture this opportunity that educating girls represents. And we would make it as the centerpiece of a global campaign, and we would use all the things that you guys use, Twitter, Facebook, social media, to share this film, this idea around the world. And the core message, because it's always really important in everything you do to understand what your core message is, the core message of our campaign is simple: educate girls, change the world. I'm sort of bent over like a hunchback. It's not very comfortable. So we traveled around the world. We partnered up with 7 nonprofit organizations that are helping girls all around the world. And we asked them to help us meet girls, just girls, girls whose personal experiences would highlight the barriers, like taking care of siblings instead of going to school, the barriers that adolescent girls particularly face to going to school. And here's the director, Richard Robbins, in Nepal, meeting these girls, and we interviewed hundreds. And we faced enormous obstacles in making this film. It took us 2.5 years. We traveled to 9 countries. We met hundreds of girls. And here we are filming in Ethiopia. The tricky part about filming in Ethiopia is that it's dusty and it's hot. The other tricky part is that no matter where you go, a crowd gathers. So you're not going to see the Ethiopian chapter of Girl Rising today, but it's a very poetic, Meryl Streep voices it over. It's a very poetic, lyrical, beautiful chapter with a lot of long, still shots that needed to be quiet. So Richard was always like this with a crowd of people behind him trying to say, shh, we're filming. We went to Peru. This is Peru on the left, the highest mountains where the crew sometimes had to use oxygen to breathe. We went to Haiti. You'll meet Wadley. In the film, 7 of the 9 girls play themselves. And in 2 other chapters, Egypt and Afghanistan, why did you think we weren't able to have the girls play themselves? Dangerous, right? But we're just telling stories about what happens to girls. What's dangerous about that? I'll tell you something. It's very dangerous to... Yeah.
I
It's dangerous to challenge the status quo. If you're someone who's being put down or in the Egyptian chapter, the girl is a victim of sexual violence, it's hard to face that that happens and people look away. Wadley's amazing. So that's Asmara and Ethiopia. I just decided to do this at the last minute to show you behind-the-scenes pictures. So as we traveled the world, we interviewed all these girls, and we picked like the six or seven whose stories were emblematic of the barriers that girls faced to education and who had a certain something that we thought would translate into the film, a courage, a determination. We saw these girls, and they were so full of courage and determination, and that's the story we wanted to tell. Because often when you're telling a story about people who live in more difficult circumstances than maybe we do, there's a tendency to tell a story of pity, to try to evoke pity, right? Feel sorry for this poor. People don't want your pity. These girls don't want your pity. They just want an opportunity. And pity is not an emotion that drives long-term change. Inspiration is an opportunity drives long-term change. So we wanted to capture the spirits of these girls in the film. And then once we'd chosen our six or seven or eight finalists, we put them in front of a writer. That is Luang Ung from Cambodia. She wrote an amazing book called And First They Killed My Father, which was about her experience under the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. And we put the girls in front of she was an Oprah Book Club selection. She's an amazing writer. She was won an award at the World Economic Forum in Davos. And we said, you choose. You choose the girl. And Luang is from Cambodia, just like Soka, who's the girl that she chose. You choose the girl you want to write a story about, and you inject that story with a bit of you and your knowledge of the culture, and you help Soka. You help us bring Soka's story to the screen. Help us make a screenplay. It's a hugely collaborative project. And so once Soka had finished his screenplay, she shared it with Richard and Robbins, the director. And then we went back. So we went on a first trip to find Soka. The second trip so that Soka and Luang could meet and get to know each other and hang out. And the third to shoot. And so this is us shooting Soka. Soka opens the film. Originally, Soka's was the first story we shot. She's an incredible story. She grew up on a dump in Phnom Penh after she was orphaned at the age of 9, and she was literally rescued at the age of 14 by a passerby, basically. And all she said is, "I want an education," and her life has been transformed. She speaks publicly all over Cambodia now, and she also knows how to do this beautiful Khmer dancing that you'll see at the opening of the film. Soka's story was really awesome. We shot it first. It didn't work. It didn't work the way we wanted it to work. And so now it's like a coda at the beginning. It's like a little bit of magic at the beginning of the movie. So you'll see that. And as you watch it, think about how sometimes you have you imagine how you want something to go and that doesn't actually go your way. How do you make the best of it? So we made the best of Soka's story. But if you Google Soka and Girl Rising or 10 times 10 online, you'll see her longer story that was played out. There's a video of that. This is Roxana. She's an artist out of India. You're not going to meet her today, unfortunately. We shot in all sorts of conditions. We shot in the monsoons in India. Richard said he was either wet from rain or wet from sweat. Every day in India, they insisted on blessing the camera. And Richard was like, dude, time is money. We got to get going. And the camera blessing took like 45 minutes. They're very spiritual in India. There are lots and lots of different gods, and you burn incense. And anyway, the day he said, no more blessing. Today we just go to shoot. Guess what happened? Camera broke. Yeah. And this is Suma. You'll meet Suma today. Suma, and you'll hear her story. This is Suma as we met her. And we asked her a whole bunch of questions. We asked all the girls a lot of questions about their lives and what they'd been through. And Suma was sold into slavery by her parents when she was 6. And she was rescued when she was 13. And you'll hear her story. She lived with 3 different people. And when we asked about that time, She said, I can't talk about it. It's too painful. But I will sing you a story. I started to write songs during that time. And my story is in my song, and I'll sing you one of the songs. And she did. And again, I urge all of you to Google Suma Sings when you get home. No one's writing it down, which means you're not going to do it. Suma Sings. Yeah, right, in the lockbox. Because what you're going to see today is what happened to Suma's song. So all we had for inspiration was Suma straight to camera singing this song about her parents giving birth to a girl and what a tragedy that was. Why I'm telling you to do this is because we're going to watch the chapter and you're going to see a little snapshot of how you go from meeting someone with a board and a song into telling a beautiful story that's shot and produced, that Kerry Washington narrates. And then we asked all of our girls what change looks like to them. And Suma's answer is, change is like a song you can't hold back. So think about that. That's what she said to us in the interview. Think about that as you're watching this clip. Change is like a song you can't hold back. And how that was woven into the writing of the chapter and the message of the piece. So that's good. Okay, end slideshow. I could go on, but I'm not going to. We're going to now watch. Let me get out of here. So we are now going to watch the first three chapters of Girl Rising. You're going to hear Cambodia, Soka's story, narrated by the one and only Alicia Keys. You will hear Haiti, narrated by Kate Blanchett, and written by the extraordinary writer Edwige Dandekot, a Haitian hero. And you will hear Suma, Kerry Washington. You will also hear a story. You'll also hear facts about girls' education as told to you by Liam Neeson. A man. Why a man? Why a man? Why do you think we chose a man? We had two reasons. Quality. I'm going to shoot back only because I think women have amazing quality voices. So not sure if that's what you mean by quality. Equality. No, actually it wasn't about equality. But that's a good guess.
The issue is universal.
The issue is universal. And if I said to you, we should have a special program for women who wear blue sweaters, because women who wear blue sweaters deserve special treatment. You're like, but you're wearing a blue sweater. And it's the same with women's rights. If it's only us that's advocating for stuff that makes common sense, it makes economic sense, it makes social sense, it's going to mean more food, it's going to mean healthier children, like, why are we the only ones shouting about it? It's a good idea. It's like saying only people with blue. If we found out that if everyone with blue eyes, if you hired people with blue eyes, they would make money, more money for your company, do you think that only people with blue eyes would be hiring people with blue eyes? No. So it's a stretch, but whatever. The point being that we thought strategically having a man deliver the evidence of girls' education would be a good idea. And the second reason, I've gone on too long. Went to sleep. The second reason is that with all those women's voices, it's nice to have a change. And Liam Neeson is a... Great. Oh, no. Okay, hold on. Here we go. Okay. With no further ado, Girl Rising.
Nhóm chi bộ ba min sum rus ma.
This is a simple story.
Thy hang do chi
And it did not begin here. This thing of beauty, a joy forever rising. This warm glow in darkness, like a harvest moon. A Khmer proverb whispers, celebrate when the moon is bright. But for years, she was a child of the dump. A place where smoke blackened sun and moon. And eyes seldom looked up from the world of things tossed aside. School would teach, hunting the rot for glints of light, metal containers, silver spoons. Listening for the sound a prong makes when it finds a plastic bottle. Careful not to step on used syringes, rusty nails, or broken glass. In daydreams, she pictured freshly sharpened pencils, rows of desks, the chant of the alphabet. Wandering visions to pass long empty days in a place where a girl is simply one more thing the world has thrown away. Girl's dreams came true. She had not dreamt of gold. She had not wished for beauty. Hers was a simple dream. The bright white shirt of a school uniform. The crisp pleats of a skirt. Shelves full of books. A dream of school. Now she dances behind a contented smile. Because she knows this is no longer a simple story. Now this is her story to write. She is the author, and this is not the end. It is just the beginning.
This is Wadley. She's 8 years old. She plays herself in a story from her own life that you are about to see. Just like Suka did. And just like the other girls you will meet. Sena, Asmira, Suma, Mariama, and Roxana. Two others, who we'll call Yasmin and Amina, could not appear in their stories out of concern for their safety. Each of these girls was paired with a writer from her own country to help tell her story. These are true stories, if sometimes reimagined, to capture the things these girls and these writers want you to see. And their stories are important. Because these girls hold our future in their hands. If they and the millions of girls like them succeed in getting the kind of education they need, incredible things will happen. For them, for their families, for their community, for their country, for all of us. Here's the hard truth. In spite of the fact that educating a girl is one of the highest return investments available in the developing world, millions of girls just aren't making it. Right now, there are 66 million girls out of school, and many more who struggle every day to simply remain where they belong, in a classroom.
January 12, 2010, was bright and beautiful in a way that Wadley could not remember any other morning ever having been before. It was the dry season when wildflowers bloomed, and flowers that bloomed on their own without rain fascinated some little girls. It made impossible things seem possible, unachievable things appear doable. And the flowers, the hibiscus, the azaleas, the bougainvilleas, they all looked even brighter when Wadley was happy.
Wadley, Sanui, how about it up to school?
That morning, Wadley was working to memorize Toussaint Louverture's final speech as he was removed from Haiti by the French after he tried to win independence for the country. Wadley liked to imagine herself defiant, like brave Toussaint Louverture. But she also wished she'd been given some words by women to recite. And strong women, like her mother.
What do you say, Chico Sifi?
Every day, Wadley brought two snacks from her mother's tray, one for herself and one for another child. That day, she chose a new friend, Shelda, a girl whose father had been killed the week before. He was a taxi driver, and someone had gotten into his car with a gun and asked him to get out. He had refused, and the person had shot him. Soon the moment came for Wadley and her classmates to recite their quotes from the history lesson.
Alexandra!
Wadley watched as some of her friends recited, or failed to recite. Their stammers, stutters, and hesitations seemed to her like a long poem, a love poem to history.
Wadley?
Profond et n'embrasse.
afternoon, all Wadley could think was it was the dry season when wildflowers bloomed. And these words seemed a perfect beginning for her composition and a fitting bookend to her day. For they seemed to emerge somehow out of the dream that she had been having that morning. Wadley could not remember how she and her mother got to the open field near the university. It was still the dry season, but wildflowers no longer bloomed. In the tent camp, she often heard the most dazed of the adults say, "Ashes to ashes, dust to dust." This they said when they were finally resigned to the fact that their missing loved ones would never be coming back. Life tried to return to normal, except now her mother roamed the city during the day, looking for friends and family from whom to seek help. And instead of school, Wadley went to the water fountain with a bucket. Every day now, as she passed through the camp and the ruins of her neighbourhood, she thought about school. Sometimes, as she walked by the rubble of the school itself, she thought she heard the voices of her friends reciting the lessons that she now missed so much.
Est-ce que vous avez l'argent?
Money was still not completely clear to Wadley. She knew that there was never enough of it, that some people had more of it than others, and that it determined, in many cases, how people looked at you, and talked to you, and treated you. It was the reason some people ate three meals every day, while others ate every couple of days. It was why, she was learning now, that some kids went to school, and others did not.
Wadley, bye-bye, à plus tard.
Bye-bye, mom.
The next morning, Wadley decided that she would go to school and sit on the bench in front of Madame Roy along with the others. No matter that there was no money, that's what she would do. For a moment, Wadley wondered how Madame Roy could not recognize her. But
remembered Wadley. The earthquake had twisted a lot of people's minds. Many people did not even recognize themselves anymore.
Oui, madame, c'est l'air pour venir ici. Moi,
je connais Wadley. Mais en réalité, ça, c'est nouveau l'école. Oh, mon père est moi à l'école déjà?
Non, pas d'école.
Moi, bien, regarde ça. Mais obligé à la faire Wadley. Les hauts capés et Wadley.
Wadley decided that even though money could do many things, it was also a curse, because only a cursed thing could keep her out of school. But she was not cursed. Hadn't she been hearing from her mother and the others in the tent camp that those who had survived the earthquake were blessed? Surely it meant that she was supposed to do something special. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, she thought to herself. The next morning, Wadley started for the tent school again. She wasn't sure what she was going to do, but she was determined to go and stay.
L'école pour déjà Wadley. Est-ce que maman paye l'école pour déjà?
Non.
Est-ce qu'on a déplacé la Wadley?
Non.
Pour la car Wadley?
Non.
C'est la dernière fois que je dis ça.
À tout point pour me tourner, je suis toujours fini jusqu'à pas m'arrêter.
Sois-tu là?
À tout point pour me tourner, je suis toujours fini jusqu'à se m'arrêter.
And the flowers, the hibiscus, the azaleas, the bougainvilleas, they all looked even brighter when Wadley was happy. They even seemed to thrive from it.
Girls who go to school see immediate benefits beyond the things they're learning. Being a student enhances their status in the community. It improves their health. It makes them safer. But in the developing world, getting an education is not what people expect girls to do. Girls are expected to work, expected to fetch water, to care for younger children, to get jobs. Or worse. It happens to girls like Suma. Suma's parents didn't send her to school. They sent her to work. It's called Kamlari.
I write songs to remind myself that my memories are real. And often, because there's so much sadness behind me, what comes out is sad. Both of my parents were bonded as Kamlar and Kamlari in their childhood. That's the way things have been around here. That's the way they have been for the poor. You have to bond yourself to a master, otherwise, how will you live? this was the house of my first master. My mother and father bonded me just so that I would have somewhere to live and enough food to eat. I was 6 years old. Fagutharu was a landlord and a miller. He made me work from 4 a.m. to late at night. I had to clean the house and wash the dishes and go to the forest to fetch firewood. When I wasn't minding the goats, I had to mind the children. The goats were nicer. The daughters made fun of me because my clothes were torn. They teased me. They beat me. I wanted my mother and father to take me back. I wanted them to let me stay at home and go to school like my brother. But when I thought about how poor they were and how much they too had suffered, it made me feel weak. I couldn't ask. This was the house of my second master. Janakmala wore a uniform to work. He and the mistress of the house were very hard-hearted. Unlucky girl, they used to call me. Hey, unlucky girl, do this, they'd shout. They made me sleep in the goat shed and wear rags and eat scraps from their dirty plates. I can't really talk about everything that happened to me here, but I will never forget. This is where I began to write songs. Only the songs got me through.
Swarthi bato amar dai baba ka ka janma dilu ta chai ha ka ka janma dilu ta chai ha dadu bhai
was the house of my third master. I was 11 years old when I arrived at Chittai Tharu's house. I had been a Kamlari for 5 years. It wasn't as bad here. I mean, it was bad because there was a lot of work. But there was a lodger in that house, a school teacher called Bimal Sir. He changed my life. Bimal Sir convinced my master and mistress to enroll me in a night class. All of us would gather after finishing our day's work and we would learn to read and write. I loved that night class so much. It was run by social workers for girls just like me, Kamlaris. We would also talk to the teachers about what it was like to be a Kamlari. And as we talked, we began to realize that bonded labor was, and isn't it, slavery.
Namaste.
The teachers who ran the night class began to go from house to house. They wanted to liberate us. One teacher, Sita Didi, told my master that he was breaking the law by keeping me as a Kamlari. She talked about the law against bonded labor, and the law about children's rights, and the law on labor rights, and the law against domestic violence and trafficking. She talked to him about justice and injustice, and she demanded that he set me free. My master said no. Once made, a bond couldn't be broken. Sita Didi didn't give up. She kept arguing. She came back day after day. And in the end, she led me home to my mother and father. I am my own master now. I have no mistress. I was the last bonded worker in my family. After me, everyone will be free. I feel as though I have power. I feel like I can do anything. And I have important things to do. Inside this house is a girl like I was. Away from her parents, working morning to night. Wanting so badly to be free. We have come to this house, the house of her master, to say, we know you have a Kamlari working for you. You must set her free.
Phulko aakhama phulai sansara karako aakhama karai sansara.
I've seen where change comes from. When it comes, it's like a song you can't hold back. Suddenly, there's a breath moving through you, and you're singing. And others pick up the tune and start singing, too. And a sweet melody goes out into the world and touches the heart of one person. Then another, and another.
You see what I mean about the song? So throw out some words. What did you guys think of that, what you just saw? You want to see more? Good. What you saw, there's an hour and 14 minutes that you didn't get to see. And you can see more. You guys can go to girlrising.com and select arrange a screening. And I urge all of you to bring Girl Rising to your schools and invite a lot of boys to come and see it with you and your dads, right? Because so often as we've been doing this, people say, oh, this is a great mother-daughter thing. It is. But if boys were behind, would you say that moms weren't allowed to come? No. So one of the big parts of Girl Rising is not just the film, it's the campaign. How many of you guys are on social media? So we need you. The campaign is designed to spread the word about the power of educating girls to transform societies. And one of the roles that you can play in your own life is to use your power, because how many of you have more than 50 friends on Facebook? I've heard that, you know, we old people, like, you hit 500 and it's like, oh my God, that's too many. But I think you guys collect friends faster than we do. But to use the power of your own network to spread the word. So visit the Girl Rising Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and organize a screening and use social media to get people to your screening and use social media to participate in a global conversation about making change. Because that's a way that you can actually make change. You are all agents of change, and we're looking for leaders. When I do presentations like this, what we found is that 90% of you, you know, it's interesting, and maybe you'll do maybe you'll visit on Facebook or something. But 10% of you will say me, and maybe because you guys are all here, you're actually the 10% of the 90%. So I've already found my leaders, But being a leader is enormously rewarding. And I challenge you, if you've never organized before, I challenge you to arrange a Girl Rising screening as a way to train yourself to be a leader and to feel how amazing it is to say, I'm going to do this, get some friends involved, and then pull it off. It's a movie screening. What can go wrong? So I want to turn it over to you. I only have about 9 minutes, five. And I didn't want to be yakking at you. I wanted you to have a chance to answer questions, but I just decided to show you some behind-the-scenes shot because I thought that would be interesting. So I hope you're glad that I made that trade. But does anyone have questions for me about the project? So we're taking this film all around the world. We're putting it in front of global leaders, Queen Rania of Jordan, Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of Britain, has seen it. Hillary and Bill Clinton have seen it. The Bush Institute has it. We're working with them on a screening. We're trying to do everything we can to get it in front of people who have power over girls. And we are in a position in this country we're so lucky to have the education, opportunity for education that we all have. Question. I got to have at least one before we leave here today. Yes, in the back.
Have you been nominated for an Academy Award yet?
All right, everybody cross your fingers, please. The shortlist for the Oscars coming out any minute now. So, you know, we didn't do this film to win awards. It would sure be nice. No matter what happens, we've made kind of history. We're in the top 100 documentaries of all time, so that's cool. We may not get a nomination for two reasons. One is that there are so many famous people associated with the film that can work against you in Hollywood, having all of our amazing narrators, but we did that on purpose so that we'd end up on the cover of magazines, because that's how you do it, right? Number two, it's not quite a documentary and it's not quite a feature film. So we broke the mold. And because we broke the mold, we're in the documentary category, but we're kind of cheating a little bit. But pray for us. It would be so good for girls. It would be so good for the cause. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, either one. You guys decide. You go first on the right and then on the left. Yeah, so we've kept track of all of them with the help of our nonprofit partners, and actually with our help of our corporate partner Intel, we're ensuring that all of them have education through tertiary if that's what they choose to do. And that sometimes means not just supporting them, but supporting their family unit as well. For example, Senna, who lives in Peru, has moved off the mountaintop where she lived. It's an amazing story, you guys. The Peruvian story is amazing. So they're all doing well except for the girl in Egypt who is engaged to be married, even though she's only 12. Yeah, hello, right? That has got to stop. That is not okay. Next question?
Oh, I have the same question.
Same question, yeah. So, Suma, the reality, though, is that doing well doesn't always look like it looks in a storybook. So Suma has been trying to pass her next level exams now for 2 years, and she just failed again, and you actually only get two chances, and after that you're not allowed into the system to move on. So, you know, Room to Read is her organization, and they were really disappointed. You know, you want to be able to tell this sort of nice, pretty, tied up in a bow story, but Suma missed 6 to 12, guys. She was not in school. She wasn't learning anything. That's a lot of catching up to do to get to 16 and pass your exams that are based on the, you know, levels of learning that you've achieved till then. And my attitude is that Suma is working every day to end cum laude for girls in Nepal. She marches. She does intervention programs. She counsels girls. She's not failing anything. Success looks different no matter how you slice it, no matter who you are. I did at ABC, one of my favorite stories was a piece I did called Success Without College. How many of you know that Bill Gates did not graduate from Harvard? Now, I am not advocating that you go home and say, I don't care about studying because I can be successful without college. But what I am saying is that every path is different, and success comes from being determined on the inside, and Suma is determined. One more? Can we squeeze one? Yeah, two more minutes? Yes. So does anyone want to answer that question, or do you want me to? Go ahead. Yeah, that's right. Yeah?
Is it possible to take that Egyptian girl out of the situation? Or is it just the government
that's... No, it's not the government. It's her mom. It's her mom. Her mom thought that was the best outcome for her, that given limited choices. You'll watch the chapter, watch the film, see the chapter. You know, these choices are very difficult, and given her mother's situation, she just thought she's just trying to think about safety for her daughter and someone who's going to take care of her. But that's because she's not the future for a little girl who's been assaulted in Egypt is not bright. So one of her currency has been lost because her value was for her body, not her mind. And that's what we need to change, right? And if you steal a girl's currency, because that's the currency that your society is seeing, so that's what we need to change. We need to change the fact that girls are valued for their bodies, not their minds. And how do you do that? You talk about what girls can bring to the, you know, to the party in terms of up here. But now let me just quickly go to what you can do. In the absence of government intervention, the organizations that meet girls' needs are nonprofit organizations like our partners, Room to Read, CARE, World Vision, Plan International. Here in Texas, almost every one of those organizations has a chapter here, so you can raise money. We have a fund, the Girl Rising Fund. You can raise money and give money and make a difference. That may not be for you. You guys have the power of technology on your side. The world is this big. You can, if you spend some time on it, reach out to girls-focused organizations in Egypt or men organizations in Egypt and say, hey, I'm a student in Texas, and I saw this amazing film, and I think you should too. Can we organize a screening together? I mean, that's a big lift, right? But I don't want you to feel limited by borders, time zones, nationality, because Twitter and Facebook and social media and the internet allow you to build bridges. And you guys here are, whether you like it or not, you are interconnected with your sisters and brothers around the world, because that is the world we live in today. I also know that all of you have imaginations, and I can stand up here and give you 16 ways to Sunday about how to get involved, but you have to decide you want to get involved and then come to Girl Rising, sign up for our newsletter or whatever is your passion, and start with one small action. One thing that we do is organize days of visibility. So opportunities for people around the world to organize events. And our next one will be in March around the International Women's Day, which is on March 8th. And we'll be calling on people all around the world to host events that celebrate the power of the girl, the value of the girl, the value of investing in girls. Our three taglines are share her story, invest in her, and stand with her. And in March, we'll ask everybody around the world to stand with girls, host a screening, host a learning event, do a potluck, and talk about the challenges that girls face around the world. Use the tools that we have online to engage your local community and maybe set one small goal that you want to raise enough money, $250, to send a girl to school for a year in Egypt. Done. You've done something in Egypt. Okay, with that, time out. Ha! Thanks, guys.